Hi. How are you? Good. It's good to see you today. We've been gone for quite a while, so it's good to be back and in town. And the week before that, I was out of town up in Whistler, which was kind of a nice trip. And at that time, just want to give you a quick update because there was a prayer put in for our son David because he did have a seizure. I was actually up in Whistler at the time. He had a seizure, so I quickly rented a car and kind of drove back. But one of the things that had kind of an update with him is that he's had seizures in the past, but he's been seizure-free for quite a few years, you know, about 3 years or so, that he hasn't had a seizure. So it was a little bit kind of scary because the seizure that he had was a little more severe than he's had in the past, too. He usually has focal seizures, which is up the right side of his arm and head and kind of more the right side of the body. But this is really an all-body seizure that he had. Now, we're hoping and praying that, you know, it was due to him having kind of quite a high fever. So he, you know, when David gets sick, he doesn't normally get sick like everyone else does. He usually never runs a fever, his nose never runs and things like that. But this time he actually had quite a high fever, you know, 100 and something degrees, and may have triggered that off, which is a common thing. So, you know, your prayers are definitely continue to be appreciated on his behalf as far as seizures go. There's other good news, though, too. You know, a lot of times God, you know, hands you different things. And one of the things that he's handed us recently, Leanne discovered, and, you know, it's obvious by the way it happened that, you know, God kind of led us a certain direction, is to discover a concept of these enzymes. One of the things with autistic kids is, you know, the food, for example, when it goes into the stomach and stomach lining, there's some of the normal processes aren't there, so food goes straight through the wall into the bloodstream, and it acts actually like a poison. So when it acts like a poison, you know, it sets the person off, you know, a whole lot. So we had him on a very special diet, you know, which is basically no sugar, no wheat, no gluten, no milk, you know, basically nothing except for, you know, rice products and, you know, a few things like that. With these enzymes, though, there's been a whole lot of work done to help children with autism. And so we gave it a shot, and we've been on it for about 2 weeks. And basically what it's allowed them to do, we're kind of breaking it in a little bit slowly, but it's allowed them to actually get back to eating normal food, which, you know, he hasn't done for probably, I think we've been on this diet for 7 years now, you know, where you have to watch every single thing he eats at every single moment of the day or when you go out or, you know, wherever. So he's able to kind of eat normal food, and it's actually helping him kind of reverse a lot of things, and he's starting to come alive a lot more, you know, being a lot more outgoing and things like that. So, you know, the way Leanne, you know, you can talk to Leanne about the enzymes, but, you know, the way she discovered them was obviously, you know, kind of God led her a certain way and discovered these things. And every once in a while you'll find something, you know, certain things kind of incrementally help. Well, this is one of those things that it seems like it's kind of made a big leap with him. So that's been quite an encouraging thing, and, you know, made a lot of good progress with David. So he seems a lot more outgoing and just kind of trending, you know, super the other way at the moment. So it's a really good thing there. Okay, sermon today. Let's see how much time I have. Okay. I might need 5 minutes, maybe 10 at the most. Today. This sermon is for the guys. It's time we had a man-to-man talk here in the church, and this is for the men. Now, what I want to talk about today, as you see the title of my sermon up here, is talking about the role of a husband. Now, you know, in the past, over the years, I've heard a lot of sermons that dealt with, you know, husband-wife roles, and, you know, I sat in the audience, and I've heard my fair share of them, and through most of them, you know, the man kind of sits there and kind of gets told that he's the cause of every scourge on the earth and every problem in his marriage. And the wife the whole time is like, yeah, see, during the entire sermon. Now, personally, from personal effect, all I know is this just produces a slow burn in the guy and does not want to come to church the next week or thereafter. So what I would encourage us all today is, you know, if wives, yes, you probably want to elbow your husband on some things, but I'd ask, please, if you could refrain to prevent a lot of bitterness, you know, this coming week. But really what I'm going to target this at is this sermon is really for the guys to internalize, not for someone to tell them and to kind of, you know, repeat to them every time they step out of line. But I'd like for us guys to think about this, have a man-to-man talk, and to internalize this yourself. This is not something for somebody to kind of keep you in line. There is a reason why we need to talk about this subject today. I'd rather give you a subject or a sermon that helps you define what your role is. It helps you to kind of have a framework to think about, you know, what it is to be a husband and what it is that you are to be doing or to think, what the various aspects of that role are. So it's more trying to set, you know, forth to you a vision and exactly why that the Bible says what it says in these particular examples. Now, this may sound like a very narrow subject. Ladies, you can listen. That's fine. You can stay here. You don't have to leave. And if you're married, this is great. This would be good material. Now, if you're single, it still applies. If you're thinking about getting married someday, this would be a good start to start thinking about, you know, how to look at marriage and becoming a husband. Now, if you're going to be single and remain single as a man, that's fine, too. There's a lot of principles that are in this message that apply to being a man, period. So for all the guys in the room, this message applies, even though it's titled The Husband. The role of a husband, it applies to all men here. Now, why am I covering this today? Now, when I go through this topic, one of the things I am not going to do today is I'm not going to go through books like Wild at Heart or Top 10 Ways to Love Your Wife or Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus or Chicken Soup for the Man's Soul, you know, or Man of Steel and Velvet. You know, all these books have their place. You know, it's good to, you know, go through these books every once in a while, but I'm not basing what I'm talking about here on any of these books, nor am I going to go through any of these books. These are good tools, but I think what we need to lay first, and I think we've forgotten, is that there is a spiritual foundation that the Bible lays down for the role of a husband. And I think we need to step into that and to understand the spiritual role of a husband first, have that as a foundation in our thinking. And if you start to understand that, then yeah, you can, you know, crack open some of these books and they may help you understand some points here and there. But I am not going to go through these books today. Now, why do we need to cover this topic? Let me just read just a quick quote from an article. Jada Pinkett Smith, you know Will Smith, the actor, his wife, they seem to have a pretty decent marriage. Well, she gave a speech these past couple of weeks at Harvard University and caused an outrage. Why did she cause an outrage? It was because of the following reasons. It says, just to quote part of the article, after some students were offended by Jada Pinkett Smith's comments at Saturday's Cultural Rhythm Show, the Bisexual, Gay, Lesbian, Transgender, and Supporters Alliance, some acronym, BGLTSA, and the Harvard Foundation have begun working together to increase sensitivity towards the issue of sexuality at Harvard. Students said that some of Pinkett Smith's remarks concerning appropriate gender roles were specific to heterosexual relationships. So this is a problem. It says, we offended, you know, some of these people. It said, went on to say that, you know, while her speech may have been motivational, some were insulted because they thought that she narrowly defined the roles of men and women in relationships. Some of the content was extremely heteronormative and made them feel uncomfortable. So calling the comments heteronormative means that they implied that the standard sexual relationships are only between males and females. Our position is that comments weren't homophobic, but the content was specific to male-female relationships. And this is a problem because some of the people in the audience got offended at that. I don't think she meant to be offensive, but just don't think she was that thoughtful. So the world, let's start there just for a second. I'm actually not going to address the world at all in this sermon, but the world is completely adrift. If you understand what this article is saying is that she's talking about, from her experience, just what it means to have a good husband-wife relationship, and people became offended because she narrowly defined that as a man and a woman, whereas she wasn't sensitive to all of the other things that are going on in the world. So this became a huge uproar. That is the state of the world and how adrift and how kind of there is zero foundation that's going on there. So all of these kind of things become issues. Now, I'm not going to address that because that is an extreme that the world is going down. But what I do want to talk about here is to us in the room here. And why do I want to talk to us in this room? Because my supposition to you is that I think we as men, more often than not, probably are abdicating our roles, our proper roles as a husband. That we are stepping out of that, that we are not, first of all, recognizing that, and that second of all, we are not doing that. Now, because of that, there are a lot of problems. Now, again, I'm not saying every problem is the cause of man, but if you understand what God set in motion, you'll see that there is a vision that He holds out for you to fulfill. And that is exactly what I want to talk about today. Now, I think there is a crisis in proper leadership, and you see this all over the place. There's a crisis in proper leadership in the families that starts with the husband, and you see a lot of families coming apart. And what I'd like to step through today is to explain exactly how this works, what God said for the man to do, and also certain effects of not doing that properly or abdicating your role as a husband, because there is a spiritual role that God defines for us. Now, let's turn over to Ephesians 5. And I'm only going to go through a section of Scripture today. It's not that, I'm not going to throw at you 27 points of what it takes to be a husband. Because, you know, if you're like me, I can probably remember two things. And that's about the extent of my brain power. You know, so I'm going to give you three things today, and that's it. That's all I'm going to talk about. It's not 27 things, but three very simple things that we're going to go through. Now, there's a section of Scriptures in Ephesians 5, and starting in verse 22. And, you know, a lot of times we read this, and they feel very uncomfortable. You know, because we read through this and we say, oh, wow, you know, in today's society, this is a very sensitive topic, what I'm about to read to you. You know, which is a shame because we're probably reading it wrong because what's defined here are a lot of things. There are things for women in this set of scriptures. There's things for men. There's things for children. And there's relationships between those three things I just mentioned there that are defined here. Now, what I'm going to pick out of these scriptures, let's just read through the set of them, then I'd like to pick out what is addressed specifically to the husbands. It'll tell us or help us see. So, verse 22 says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and He is Savior of the body. Therefore, just as Christ is subject, church is subject to Christ, so let wives be in their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her, that He might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that He might present her to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and without blemish." And in verse 28, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies, and he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of His body, and His flesh, and of His bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." Now, I'm also going to go through chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, because it's part of this context. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for that is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long in the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in training and admonition of the Lord." So I read through that set of scriptures because this is the part of the Bible that I'm just going to focus on today and explain what is said here. So first of all, let's kind of just distill out of what I just read there, what is specifically addressed to the husband, and we come up with basically three things here. When it specifically is talking about what the husband should be doing, there's three things. It says, for one, the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, is one thing. Two, it says, husbands, love your wives. And then three, it says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. So in this set of scriptures, there's three things that are mentioned. Now, a lot of times we'll read the first one and immediately like, well, you know, this, in today's society, I'm uncomfortable talking about that because women have an equal say-so. Let's understand what it's saying here because I think we probably read that incorrectly. I'm not going to water that down, but I'm going to show you exactly what that means because there's something very important God has put in place. These three things are mentioned here as for the husband, specifically addressed to the husband. Now, one way I looked at this is what if we could take, you know, how important is each one of these things, you know, to think about? Which one should I be doing most, or second, or third, or kind of what is the ratio that I think about these things? Well, what I did is I did a completely unscientific thing, and I just looked at how many scriptures in this short set of passages were related to each one of these three topics. That's all I did. How much that, you know, so for example, if somebody's giving you advice and says, you know, in marriage, do this, and they spend 5 minutes on this, 5 minutes on that, and then 20 minutes on this one topic, it probably means that that's, you know, a more important thing to think about and talk about. So when I break down kind of the number of scriptures for each one of these topics, I come up with something that looks a little like this. A breakdown of the verses, if you want to look at it graphically, would be that, you know, as far as how many relate to the topic of husband as head, there's three verses there. Bringing up children, there's four. Love your wife, there's nine. There's nine verses that are surrounding that topic there. Again, I said this is completely unscientific, but, you know, as I was going through this, and I looked at this chart again and again and again, it became apparent to me that I don't think that's by accident. I don't think that it's just a random thing. I think this is also kind of giving us a picture of how to look at and what we should be focusing our time and kind of our efforts on and in some sort of a ratio. Okay, this is kind of a rough thing, and I'll talk about, you know, near the end, what if you get these ratios kind of out of whack? What does it look like? And I think you'll start to see as we go through this that, all right, that's very interesting. I never thought about it that way. So what I would like to do is I'm just, like I said before, there's three things here. I'm just going to step through these three different areas that we have and talk about what each one of these things mean in relation to what it says to a husband. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, well, if the wife does this, it helps the husband. We're not talking about the wife's role today at all. I'm addressing the men today, period. So let's start through the first one. Now, let's take the hard one first. Husbands as head. There's a couple scriptures that we read in this context. The one that we just read there, it says, for the husband is head of the wife. It doesn't stop there, because a lot of times we'll read that and we'll say, you know, all right. You know, good stuff. Bring me a beer, woman. That is not even close to what's being said here. Okay? You know, and this is kind of the way we stop and read that, is that we read that statement and say, hey, it's a good place to be. I like being a man. I could get used to this kind of a thing. But you know, there's a complete context around what it's saying here. And again, I'm not wiring this down because there is a position that God has given man, but it says, the husband is head of the wife as Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, let wives be to their own husbands. And then 1 Corinthians 11:3 says, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man. This is actually should be translated, you know, the the wife is the man. It's not saying every single woman out there. Like, men, you're in charge of every woman out there. This is really talking in context of the roles that God has given in a family. Okay, just to kind of clear that up there. Now, there are a couple scriptures that are there. So what does this type of, you know, thing mean? you know, a lot of people see this as old school. You know, Paul's time was a very against women type of a society. And so that these scriptures are a relic left over from that. Is that true? That's not true. Yes, they were a very male-dominated society, but that's not what this is saying here. That is not saying this is a cultural thing. What this is actually describing, and let me put this out to you, is this is a spiritual role that God has set up. God has set up a spiritual role for this, and that is what he's describing here. Now, you know, cultural differences, like I was explaining before, we can't even talk about heteronormative male and female. It has to be male and what, you know, female and whatever, or male and whatever, literally. You know, and that's the accepted thing. Well, God has set male and female, and he has put man and given him a spiritual role there. This is not old school. There is a spiritual dimension to this statement that is completely true, that because you feel uncomfortable with it, doesn't mean you walk away from it and say, oh, I don't want to offend anybody. It's not what is going on here. Let's understand what this means. So if we look at this, you know, this is something God set up. Now, why did he set it up that way? You know what? God just did. God set it up this way. But what he's talking about is a spiritual position. Is this kind of, you know, how we look at it God is the head of Christ, what it said, Christ is the head of the husband, husband the head of the wife, and, you know, the wife can't do anything unless it goes through the husband, and, you know, this type of thing. That's not really the picture there, because there's another phrase that's used in those verses there, which kind of sheds a little bit of light on it. It says, you know, wives submit to the husband as to the Lord. And what that basically means is, you know, as if you were doing it to the Lord, as if when you submit to the Lord, because a wife, women, men, everybody out there has a direct relationship with their Savior Christ. This is not saying that I just go through my husband, you know, for every type of thing. When it says, you know, wives submit to your husbands as to the Lord, as if you were submitting to the Lord. Like when you submit to the Lord, it's the same type of thing. You're deliberately, consciously saying, you know, I submit to the Lord. Well, I also am choosing I'm going to submit to my husband as well. So when we look at that, to complete kind of the picture a little bit better, maybe a little bit more accurate. And again, these are drawings. You're not going to, you know, get every nuance here. But what it is saying in these sets of verses is that God has set up something for a man to be a spiritual head over a wife in a certain degree. A wife has direct access to Christ. And you see this because, you know, what if your husband's not in the church, or what if your husband's not fulfilling that role? Are you doomed? That is not the case. You can and you always should go to Christ directly. But God or Christ has said, look, there is a position, a spiritual role that I would like a husband to play, and I expect you to fulfill that role. I expect you to do this role. Now, what is that role? If we look at it, you know, part of the problem of looking at this is a lot of times we look at, you know, what the role is, oh, well, I get to be in charge. God doesn't work like that. You know, think about that kind of, you know, I get to be the boss of you. Now, did Christ ever even utter that phrase, or would you ever hear him or think of him uttering that phrase? It just wouldn't happen. Christ wouldn't say, hey, I'm the boss of you. You know, you do this. God gives a role, a position, for a reason. It's to lead, and there's a responsibility associated with it. So when you read the phrase that man is, you know, or the husband is head of the wife, you shouldn't read that, well, you know, my opinion counts. And, you know, if we ever get into a situation where, you know, there needs to be a decision made and it's your opinion against mine, mine counts. It's not what it's talking about here. When God talks about giving somebody a position, think about this. What if you had to be the head of the church? This church here is a pastor. It's not so you get to, oh, I get to, you know, this week I get to tell everybody what to do. God gives positions so that you can fulfill that role. It's very much for fulfilling a role, for doing something. You are now responsible. It is 99.99% you are now responsible for something that you had better take seriously. Hear it like that, because it is not the other, oh, I get to, you know, my opinion counts more than your opinion now. It has nothing to do with that. Christ was given a position. Christ came to this earth and set the example. It wasn't so that he could be the boss of everybody. He died, he fulfilled a purpose, a responsibility, and he sat down at the right hand of God, and he still has a position which is full of responsibility of bringing all the sons to glory. It is full of that intent, 100%. That is the intent of what it says when it's head. You have a responsibility. And what I'm saying is, we read that and we're uncomfortable with the phrase, so we duck out and say, whoa, I don't want to offend the women. It's not what it's saying here. That it's saying that you have a responsibility you cannot abdicate on a spiritual sense. Now, if you think about this too, to lead in something, for example, take the example of Christ, because it says, you know, Christ is the head of the man. That's the example that's given. To lead somebody, you have to be doing first, or you have to have done. Right? And that means all senses of the word. It means spiritually sound, you know, spiritual soundness, which means, you know, for a man to lead and spiritual soundness is you should be the one who is studying, digging, and not with the intent to preach that word, but if you are given responsibility in this position, that's part of the responsibility is to be spiritually sound. Doesn't mean a woman doesn't study, but, you know, I think a lot of men are content to sit back and say, well, you know, my wife, she does a good job studying. She's got this unique view. I just love to hear her talk about the Bible. It's not sitting in this position correctly. It's not saying that, you know, you're the one who knows it all. It's saying that to lead, you should be thinking about what it means to be spiritually digging into the Bible so that you can live that. It does not mean preaching that. You live that, you know it. If the discussion ever comes up, you are the one who can lead a discussion. I'm not sure that we're at that place completely. Now, what about, spiritual and emotional maturity? That's part of it. That's growing up in a Christian, as a Christian, becoming a spiritually mature Christian. You should be the one, as a man, who leads that. That's what this means. You have a responsibility to lead spiritually maturely. If you get into an argument, don't react. You are the one who should, in those cases, take the spiritually mature high road. Okay, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, where the woman does that sometimes, which is great to see happen, or the woman says, look, you're the one who's supposed to be doing that. What I'm saying is, as a general rule, you should be setting the pace when it comes to spiritual and emotional maturity. Generally, that is what you as a man should be doing. So when you read Husband's Head of the Wife, read, I have a huge amount of responsibility that I need to think about. Spiritually discussing things, right? There are times when, you'll need to discuss or times when you'll need to teach. But you know what? It's not about, I think we kind of have a wrong view of this, that, you kind of wake up and, here's what everybody needs to do, and you write down a list for everybody, and here's the 10 points that you need to fix. It's not talking about that. It's talking about, you're thinking about life. You're looking at your family. You think that, there are certain issues that are maybe encroaching, or there's certain things that you see that might affect you, and you figure out what it is to, make the right choices for your family. Discuss about it. Say, look, it would be great. I think that, our family is maybe, this is an issue. Maybe society is kind of barging in on you, and you say, well, I think we'd like to find a place where we can get to the place where we're all at peace. We're all happy. What do you think it takes to get there? But you're the one leading these discussions. You're the one who has your eye on what it takes to lead and to discuss spiritual issues with your family. Now, another thing, as it says here, as Christ did, is the concept of intercessory prayer. It says, as Christ loved the church is another phrase that there. But this is something where you as a husband are looking out for your family. Now, when we're talking a spiritual role, that means there's spiritual things going on here. There's spiritual warfare that's going on here. So you're looking at your family. You are praying for your family. You are praying, you're not praying, God help my wife to see what a horrible person she is. You are saying, she's overloaded, there's frustrations, help her if you can give her a peace, if you can open it up so that she can be at peace, give me wisdom so I know what to do to help that. If somebody's struggling with something spiritually, you're not nailing them, you're asking and going to God on their behalf as an intercessor. What did Christ do to the apostles, and what does he do for us? That's what he does for us. He is on your side. You as a husband should be on the side of your family. You should look and see what your children need. You should see what's plaguing them, where spiritually they may be getting attacked, and you go and go to God on their behalf. And again, I'm not excluding, I'm saying, a woman can't do this, but I'm just saying when it talks about husband is head of the wife and the family, these are responsibilities that Christ laid down as a pattern for us that we must do, that we have to do. Now, kind of look at this, doing those number four, doing those four things. And obviously, that's not an all-inclusive list, but think about this in the context of, if you look at the roles that are played out here, God, head of Christ, Christ the head of the husband head of the wife, it's almost absurd to ask the question, but, is God doing those things as the head in his role over Christ? It's almost absurd to me to ask that, but think about this. Absolutely. God's not doing anything or asking us to do anything that he has not already done. Now, what about Christ? Can you ask the same question? Is he doing those four things? Did he do those four things? It's an absurd question too, doesn't it? Sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? Sounds kind of funny, but when it's talking about a spiritual position that you sit in, God does that. Christ does that. Now, let's get down to the husband. Let me just ask the question, in this chain of a spiritual role, are you doing those things or not? And it sounds absurd to ask it about God and Christ, but if you're part of this chain of a spiritual position that's here, that is something that you must take very seriously and to seriously think about. And I would put out to you that if you're not doing those things, then you're not in that role. And it'd be absurd to think about, what if Christ lived his life and did these things half the time? Or one-third of the time? You know, what kind of effect would that have on the people below? A huge effect. And you need to think about it in those terms, that Christ came, lived, and died completely in this role with these things at all times, and there was a reason for that. Now, the husband, we have to start to think about doing those things for real. It's a spiritual role in that same sense. When I say I think we're abdicating the role, I mean that I think we're stepping out of doing this type of thing. We're not really important, or, you know, I'm just kind of managing by the crisis that comes up. I'm not on top of it like that. So continuing on here, it is a spiritual role. It is a spiritual position. Just because you may feel uncomfortable with it and you abdicate it doesn't mean it goes away. A lot of times I think we want to ignore it. Now, if you vacate that position, what have you done? What have you done if it's not there? A lot of times we look at things just on a physical level, but this is a spiritual battle that God has set a position up. You have put the wife in a position where she should have somebody who is interceding on her behalf, asking God to help and to protect them, to fight those spiritual battles for the family with them. You've put her in that position to go do that. Okay? And hear me correctly with this, because a wife can do that at any given time, and I'm not saying that. But God said, I want man to do this on behalf of your family. God said to Christ, I want you to do this on behalf of the earth. Christ says, I want man to do this on behalf of your family. You must step into that role. If you step out of it, you are opening up your family to things in a spiritual battle that are spiritual in nature. And what do we do as men? We think they're all physical. We think, you know, all the little attitudes or the resentments or the attacks that happen to our kids or the frustrations in our wives' lives are all physical things, and they just need to shape up. And what you end up doing when you step out of this role and do not see it as a spiritual role is you see every problem as physical, and you deal with it on a physical level. You will never solve or help your family at all in that position until you understand this is a spiritual role that you must step into. You must go to God and ask, please protect my family. Please help me raise my children who are influenced. Give me wisdom with that. Help me to understand this issue they're dealing with. Please protect them from that. When it says the husband is the head, that is what it means to be doing this. I would put out that we abdicate this. Abdicate that role is what we do more often than not. Now, how do I know this to be the case? Well, I had to learn it pretty painfully in some ways. And let me give you one example. I think God clearly showed this to me, you know, a little while back, is that I was, you know, going about my own stuff. I was had my head in the clouds. I'm off on the side. I'm not doing things correctly, to be honest with you, at all. You know, maybe I'm off with, you know, doing computer stuff, off not doing things correctly, not even considering this, maybe half-heartedly praying and studying. And you know what? For a period of about, you know, 3 or 4 days, a week or so, you know, I didn't see it at the time, but it dawned on me, you know, my wife was having a lot of bad dreams. They weren't bad in the sense that it felt like just people were trying to get at her, not in a sexual way, but just trying to get at her, you know, always bugging her. My son was having nightmares. You know, he couldn't sleep. He was coming in the bed at night, waking us up. And, you know, we weren't getting much sleep, and we were trying to comfort him. And Leanne was in the position of really, you know, having to be up at night, helping to calm him down, pray for him, pray with him. And you know what God said to me? He said, you know, you are out of your role at the moment. You need to step into that role. And I remember that very clearly. It's when God tells you something, it's kind of like it all of a sudden dawns on you. You know, what am I doing? I'm over here. I've abdicated that position. I'm letting my family just deal with all these things by themselves, putting my wife in that position. And you know what? I came to God that night, and I said, please forgive me for, doing all these other things, for abdicating my position, my role. You know, I ask for forgiveness, first of all. And I come to you with asking for forgiveness, and I ask you that you would protect my wife, you would protect my son, that you would watch over our family, everything else. You know what? This happened at night when, I went to bed, everybody's asleep. Woke up the next morning, my wife says, you know what? She reached over and she kissed me. And she said, I've been having these dreams. I didn't even know it at the time. She said, I've been having these dreams. But last night, when I was having the dream, it was like, you all of a sudden appeared in the dream, stood between them and said, not today. Sorry, it's kind of hard to, at least for me, to share personal things sometimes. So, but it was like my wife in her dreams, I all of a sudden appeared and said, no, get away from her. My son stopped having his nightmares. So when I say that this is a spiritual position, it truly is. Like you abdicate that, you're going to open your family up to spiritual warfare. When you as a man have a responsibility to do battle in that, Christianity is not for wimps. It's not for the lighthearted. But you open your family up to things they shouldn't be opened up to. My wife, struggled with a lot of that week. I should have been there. On a spiritual level, I should have been there. So that hit home to me quite hard. That's how I learned this. Okay, what else? What do we know about this? Continuing on. The second thing is bring up children. It says, obey your children, honor your father and mother. But let's look at verse 4. It says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training an admonition of the Lord, is what it says here in these scriptures for the men. Now, what does this mean? Bringing up children. Let me just kind of cover a couple concepts here. This is not all exhaustive, but what does God intend with this, bringing up children? What does he mean by some of this? First of all, what is the goal for you to bring your children up? You ever thought about that? What are you doing with your kids? I'm not talking about getting them into college or, piano, good at piano. What is your spiritual goal? Spiritual position, what is your spiritual goal? Malachi 2:15 says, do you not make them one, talking about male and female? And why one? Because he seeks godly offspring. God would like your children to turn to him. That's what God seeks. God wants you with your family and your kids to have children that come to him. He would like godly offspring to continue. So your goal to start with on a spiritual level is to do what you can, and obviously things are going to be outside of your control, and this is not a, well, somebody didn't do something right. There's a response that children have to have, but your goal, you can live or die on this, and in your life, but it's to make sure that you do all you can so that your children want to come to God. He desires that. He desires godly offspring. I did not say force your children to come to God. I said that they want to come to God. They want to turn to him. Right, and part of this verse that it goes on to say, which is a very important statement, is do not provoke your children to wrath. That's what it specifically says. Why does it say that to the men? Well, guess what? Men do that really well, don't we? Right? It's very easy to, say things to our kids like, idiot, what are you doing? Or, why are you doing that smack? Or, just not giving them an inch at all. But instead, frustrating everything out of them. The Greek there does mean make angry, provoke, exasperate. Now, did I say here that you can never correct? Because what I said before, in being the head of the house, that there is going to be a time where you need to set the spiritual tone in a spiritual direction. I think we abdicate that at times too. But I think a lot of times we are top heavy on that part and don't look at the rest of this, because it said with this. That means, you know, let them be kids to a certain degree. This does not mean compromise God's law. That means let them be kids. Let them go through the phases. You probably did a bunch of dumb stuff your entire life, and you're here. You're all right. You're mostly in one piece. Let your kids be kids at a time, right? It's not a hard thing to do. God, men want them to be, you know, perfect all of a sudden. That's why it says that. Don't provoke them to wrath. But do what? But what's the opposite? What's the vision to do? It says bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. The word bring in the Greek means to nurture, nourish, up to maturity. The word husband comes from the word houseband. It means connecting and keeping together the whole family. It does not mean destroying or dividing the family. Houseband, banding the family together. Right? Nurture, nourish. And if you look at what the word husbandman meant, it was a person's job was to cultivate the ground, to grow crops. That was a really high esteem position back then. It's kind of where these words come from. And like I've talked about before, there's nourishing that has to happen there if you want to bring up plants. Training is talking about the whole, the mind, the morals, the body. It's not just lecturing. It's giving people an example. Admonition means the understanding of God, perceiving, judging, the discernment, the wisdom of God. If you're not there, what are you going to be teaching your kids? That's why I said you have to be doing this first. You're not going to be able to teach your children a thing until you have done this first and are doing this first. Now, what happens when you're teaching your kids but you're not doing it? What happens? Right? What do you think happens? What does that feel like? It's like taking marriage advice from someone who's been divorced three times. Okay, I'm not making a judgment there, but there's this lady on television who gives these marriage seminars, and she's been divorced three times, and she talks about having your own space. And I'm like, ridiculous. That's just ridiculous. I'll take marriage advice from my grandparents who've been married 50 years before I listen to someone like that. That's what it's like. It's like trying to take marriage advice from someone who can't stay married, right? Or it's like taking farming advice from someone who's never set foot out of New York City. Hopefully I'm not going to offend everybody in the world with this part, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, go read your farming books, but if you've never actually raised a garden, you know, it just doesn't fly, does it, right? That's what it feels like, right, as a kid when you do this. Or taking financial advice from a gambler who loses all their money all the time, right? You know, you as an adult, you probably run into people like this who are trying to give you advice on things they can do not at all. And you kind of roll your eyes. But you know what? Your kids see that. Kids can see that. If you're telling them something and you've never done it or you've never demonstrated it to them over the years, you know, what do you end up building in them? Is a resentment, bitterness, distrust, just passivity, like whatever. Loss of respect. Yeah, do you breed these type of things in your family? Do you see that? Now, can teens be this way on their very own? Absolutely. Okay, teens can get in a funk. I've been in a lot of funks as a teen. You can get that way all on your very own. But you know what? What I'm saying is that's not necessarily the general rule. If you consistently breed these type of things in your family, then you're probably not doing them and demonstrating them to your children. So you become that first as a man before you talk about it. Don't tell your kids to stop lying when you're lying. They see that. It feels like those things I said above. That's very important with the kids, and that is exactly what these verses say. Like I said, we always stop at husband's head of the wife and say, hey, hey, forget it. It's all of this stuff constitute what that statement means there. Okay? Moving on to love your wife. Look at the size of the pie there. Okay? And also look at what it's shaped like, a big smiley face. All right? This one is a very important one. Husbands, love your wife just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, and of his flesh. and his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave the father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one. He's speaking of the church, but he says, nevertheless, so love your own wife as himself, and see that the wife respects the husband. So, a couple points on loving your wife. Now, the word there, love, is agapeo. It's from agape. Why that word? Okay, there's other words for love. Brotherly love, I'm your best friend, great. You know, eros, sexual love. But it uses the word agape, which is the word that is godly love God uses to love us. What is agape love? Agape love is love by deliberate choice. It's not how you feel at the moment. Okay, if God did how he felt about us at the moment when we were rebelling against him or doing things wrong or a certain way, we would be obliterated by now. God set out deliberately and said, I will love these people. And he goes through with it like that. And if you read in Ezekiel 16, we were cast in a field, bloodied. Nobody wanted us. He took us. He cleaned us up. He dressed us, put fine clothes. Read that. Now read Ezekiel 16, 1 through 14 later. Read that. It's what this means. You know, because we can say, oh, but you don't have to live with my wife. You know what? None of your wives are in the situation where God looked at us and Israel and cleaned us up from. We were never that far messed up, bloodied, outcast, harlots. We were never in that way where God said, I deliberately will love you, clean you up, and bring you to a certain place. That's the connotation here. It's a deliberate choice. It's not how you feel at the moment. You decide to love. Love your wives. That's what it means. Agape your wives. There's a big difference with that. Men, that's your role. You do that. That is your role. And it goes on to say, as Christ loved the church, what did he do? He gave his life. He gave his life means, you know, he gave up his time, his energy to love his wife, to make sure she is loved. Okay, gave up the football game or the computer game or whatever it is. There's things you might have to give up here. I didn't say never watch TV. I just said there may be a time where you need to love your wife. You need to make a choice to know that your wife is loved. Right? Disciples, well, you don't have to live with my wife. You know, she never responds to anything I do. Disciples didn't respond to Christ the entire time he was alive. I mean, if you really think about it, they didn't get it till after he was dead. Could you do that? Could you go through your entire life and love till you die without the other person getting it? Maybe they get it after you're dead. Christ and God, if you can think of any situation you're in, did something 10 times further than you would ever be required of you to do. Right? And the disciples didn't respond till after he had died. And the phrase here goes on to say, he who loves his wife loves himself. These are not accidental phrases, right? And there's a saying, treat her like a thoroughbred and she won't act like a nag. Right? Think about that one. Also think about Proverbs 31, woman. That was a woman who was well-loved and empowered. Okay, that was a woman who felt loved and empowered. And this is not talking about picking out what colored clothes and how to do every little thing. That is nowhere in the intent of any of these verses at all. You love your wife, it'll come back to you in spades. This woman was out buying fields, giving her family and her husband a good name. All of a sudden, the husband just totally benefited from this. When it says you love your wife, you'll love himself, it will come back to you in spades. It's not why you do it, but it will come back to you if your life is truly a loved wife. She will be doing a lot of things. And lastly, what another part I want to put in here is in Proverbs 5:15. It says, drink water from your own cistern. Talking about not looking at other women. Drinking from what you have. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. Sexually, let your wife satisfy you. Not your damn computer in the internet. And I'm serious on this one, because how much of this do we bleed over into other things? Most computers, a third or even I've heard statistics of it, three quarters bought by guys are to surf the net for porn. Okay, there is a problem today that we must just kind of knock straight out of the ballpark and think about. When it says let her breast satisfy, it means hers, not a computer screen's. We always think, oh, well, that means my neighbor. I'm not doing it to my neighbor. Let her breast sexually be the thing that satisfies you and stimulates you. Okay, how important is this? Let me just take a kind of a sidebar here. Because pornography and addiction is such a huge problem today. A huge problem. And there's a cycle that you go through with this. Starts with a preoccupation, always thinking about sex. Then there's a ritualization of thinking about, oh, how are you going to get into the place where you can make this happen? You know, maybe you're putting everybody to bed and you're setting the whole thing up in your mind. Then the actual behavior. But then what happens is there's despair that comes, right? You feelings of utter hopelessness that, you know, a sense of powerlessness. All of a sudden you're out of control, right? You feel like this thing is kind of controlling you. And what happens when you get to that place of despair and other types of things is that you kind of will repeat the cycle because, you know, it makes you feel better temporarily, right? When you get to despair and not really liking or feeling out of control, you go back and do it again because, you know what, I get a temporary euphoria out of it. That's why addiction is such a damaging thing, a very damaging thing. Addiction is a tool of Satan that he has trapped more men in. There is a huge problem today, like I said, it's readily accessible with the internet and everything else out there to bring down our men and to get them out of this role with this cycle. Now, why do I bring that up in this context? Because what happens when you're in this despair phase, and a guy will have to admit this to himself, is you're in a state behind the scenes of self-loathing, self-hatred. You can't really stand yourself because you keep compulsively doing this type of a thing. You hate yourself. Now, why do I bring it up in this context? Paul says they should love your wives as your own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes it. Addiction will put you in a place where you hate your own flesh. There's a key here. If you want to learn to love your wife, you cannot be in an addictive cycle. If you're in an addictive cycle, you will not be loving your wife. You truly cannot love your wife because you don't even love yourself. To start with, you're not going to get past, oh, well, I can. It's on the side. I'll go for it. You know what? Sometimes you may love your wife, and then the next minute you will be biting their head off because maybe you hate yourself so much and you feel out of control. The problem is that this is a cycle. If you're stuck in, please get help. Just get help. Because you will not be at a place where you can truly love your wife, fully love your wife in an agape sense, until you're out of an addictive cycle. That is why I bring this up in this context, because this is a scourge. This is a tool of Satan that he has put out there to trap, and especially with the internet and pornography that's out there today, to get somebody in a cycle of self-loathing so that they cannot make it past square one. You won't be making it past square one with your wife as far as true love goes, truly what it means to be a spiritual man. There's a lot of things here. When I say get help, I'm not just beating you over the head, because truly there are issues that are fundamental under here that, you know, maybe you didn't like yourself to start with. Go back and get help. Just find a way to get help. Talk to someone who could help you. Because you must get out of that cycle before you're going to love somebody else. Okay, I don't say that to beat you over the head. I say that to help you understand why this is such a damaging thing that we don't recognize. Takes a man right out of his role, and he will never love his wife. Never can get to the place where she turns into something like the Proverbs 31 woman. Because of the love that he gives her. A huge, huge problem today. We must, as men, talk about and hit head on. If you need help, get help for the sake of your role, yourself, your wife, and your family. This will take you out and you won't even know it. You will think it's in a compartment on the side and you're doing fine. You're not. Let me just tell you that. You are not. So to finish up, a couple scenarios. You're not in your role if, you know, I put the percentages before. Let me kind of talk about it a little bit differently. What if your percentage of time is spent just bringing up your children? You've seen couples like this. They exist just for the kids. They go through the motions. They're robots together. There's no love. Their life is just for the kids. Kids alone. When the kids are gone, they divorce. That is kind of what this picture represents. It's out of whack. If your whole life is just for the kids, and the graphic looks kind of like Pac-Man or a mouth, right? Just eating up the top two, the husband, the wife. Graphically, it looks that way. That's what I was saying. When I started to go through this and look at this, it's kind of interesting the way it visually comes out, but that's what happens. If this is where you are and your focus, it's an admirable goal to raise your children. That is part of it, but it's only one of the three. What about scenario number two? This is probably more typical. You concentrate on, I am the head of my family, and that is what I do 90% of the time. You know, we're going to go out to eat. I know you all, everybody would like to go to this restaurant, but I think it's best that we go to Red Robin, because I am the man. Right? If you live your whole life and this is where you are, out of balance, you, as the Pac-Man, are eating up your wife and kids. Okay, look at it visually. That's what it looks like to be that far out of balance, that far out of whack, right? Or you say, you know, your wife doesn't feel loved. Well, I told you at the beginning of the week, don't you remember? I love you. And you're saying this with that kind of a voice. You know I love you. Stern look on your face. That is what this is all about. You know, I'm in my position, in my role. And that is out of balance. That is what, and I think a lot of people kind of are there. Scenario number three. This is when you're not standing in your position. Your whole life is to make your kids and your wife happy, and that's it. You're not, as a man, standing up and leading spiritually, or maybe setting the direction for your family when you need to, but your whole life exists to make sure that your kids and wife are just happy, and everything you do is about that. You know what? That's out of balance, too. There is a point where you need to be a man, stand up and be a man on a spiritual level, and start doing. And like the graphic says here, when you're in this place, you're a little tiny man, little sliver of a man, like that. And your wife and kids could, you'd be gone in a second. Graphically, that's what it looks like, and that's where you stand. If you're in this boat, you know which one to concentrate on. Start being spiritually sound and a man and doing. And when you get to that place, if you're doing all these other things, that one time you need to set the family straight, if they feel loved, they feel nourished, they feel like you're spiritually leading, it won't be hard for them to take. In fact, they'll probably welcome it and say, oh, you know, we were all kind of, you know, all over the place, but that makes sense. But if you are back on the other one, where what you're doing is always telling them what to do, the next time you tell them, you're only going to breed some more resentment and bitterness. So if you're in this boat, stand up and become a spiritual man and take your place in the family. So the final slide is pretty much in balance. Like I said before, it's very interesting when you look at how many scriptures there are that talk about each one. It's pretty much in balance. Spend a lot of time in loving your wife. You know why? Because it'll backfire on you. Your wife will be doing a lot of stuff for you and for the kids. But spend time with your children. Nurture and bring them up. But also, do not abdicate the spiritual position God gave you. Do not step out of that. Don't ignore it. Don't wimp out. Just because you wimp out doesn't mean it goes away. You have just caused damage to this whole thing. So what I'm asking to us as men today is that you recognize that when it says the husband is the head of the wife, there is a responsibility that includes all of these things in this discussion, basically in that proportion, and that you as a man must stand up and you must take your role as the husband.